I'd like to call the Transportation Finance Division order. We have the minutes of March 12th. We have a quorum. We have the minutes of March 12th. Representative Doty?
Mr. Chair, I move the minutes of March 12th.
The minutes of March 12th, as I move. Anybody questions or... If not, all in favor say aye.
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 Contrary? The minutes are adopted. And Representative Hornstein, would you move the subcommittee report?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the subcommittee report for House File 3960. That was a bill we heard yesterday concerning driver ed and trucks. That's Representative Morrow's bill.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein. Representative Morrow, do you want to comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that this bill should be referred to public safety. We've had some conversations with DVS, and we're going to make some technical changes to the bill to make it acceptable to DVS regarding the rulemaking and the driver's ed around trucks, the actual driving portion.
All in favor of moving the subcommittee report, say aye.
Aye.
The subcommittee report, say aye. Contrary? Subcommittee report is adopted.
We need another vote for one.
Yes. And the motion was to move the bill to public safety and civic something, I think.
Yes,
civil justice. Okay.
We're ready to go in now.
Before we get going through the page, Lisa, is that it? Tesla has a list for anybody. If there's any public testimony, we'd appreciate if you sign up with the page. And we will probably, if there's too much testimony, we may limit it to the same number of minutes or testifiers. Depends on what the testimony or which bill it is. And we will take a recess till 25 minutes to 5 in the DFL and 500 North.
500 North, wow.
So we temporarily have a recess for 10 minutes.
I'd like to reconvene
the Transportation Finance Division. First, for the members in your packet, the one that's titled A081387 is a compilation of the bill we did last night with all the amendments. So that's the one you'd be working off. That's basically it.
Yeah.
Basically an engrossment of the bill, but it's not an official engrossment. So that took care of all the amendments we passed last night, plus the original bill at 3800. Everybody got that? Okay. Next thing. Yeah. Representative Hornstein, are you prepared?
Yeah,
we'll pick up from where we left. Actually, we had two amendments last evening that we laid temporarily over, or not basically.
Yeah.
We'll start with Amendment A16 and go through.
Okay.
A16 is an amendment which Mr. Burris explained. Would you explain that, Mr. Burris, please? The chair will move A16.
Mr. Chair and members, the A16 amendment is similar to but has some changes from the A2 amendment. There are several provisions in this, and the basic thrust is making a number of technical changes and fixes to the transportation finance bill that was passed earlier this year. This version, the A16 amendment, contains technical changes related to both the motor vehicle lease sales tax revenue allocation as well as the allocation of flexible highway account funds. And for both those sets of revenues, the funds go into a new account that this amendment creates, which is an account for metropolitan routes of regional significance. And the amendment clarifies the procedures for how those funds are distributed. They're to be allocated by the commissioner to counties in the metropolitan area on the basis of population, except that the population calculation does not include the three largest cities in the metro. The other technical changes are the same as before regarding registration tax, some language on the debt service surcharge that for the department should administer it the same way as the other motor fuels tax, and some added flexibility on use of trunk highway bonds. There's a fair amount of language change in the amendment that consists of some structural changes as well. Some language is moved into separate subdivisions and tightened up a little bit.
For the members, the reference to the A2 amendment is not, we aren't discussing that. That's the one we had last evening. We're not moving that. That's not even in your packet, so don't get confused. This A16 is the component of A2 with some portions deleted, which the members had some problems with. Any questions about that? Do you understand what we're talking about? If not, are there any questions on the A16 amendment? Any questions? If not, all in favor of the A16 amendment as explained, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary?
No.
No.
The amendment is adopted. The next amendment is A17.
Mr. Chair, if anyone was wondering why the author voted no on that, I was a little uneasy with this to begin with when we voted on the House floor, and remain so, but I respect the wishes of the committee, and I didn't like the cut from transit, but I respect the wishes of the committee, and we'll just move forward.
That's so, on the A16 amendment.
Yeah, I just wanted to explain my no vote if people were confused. I don't know who belongs to the A17
amendment. The A16 amendment, the author of the amendment, I believe, Ruxton Morrow, is that
A17.
Or 17, I mean. 17, yeah.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative Swanson, I would move the A17 amendment. The A17 amendment members, there's a potential rail line. I talked with Representative Chunky and Representative Urdahl. They both came and they just looking to name that potential transitway the Little Crow Transitway, and that's what this amendment would do.
Then we're thinking more naming a corridor, and is that what you say?
Yes, sir.
Is there any discussions on the A17 amendment? If not, Representative Morrow moved the A17 amendment. All in favor say aye.
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 Contrary. The amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair, you mean every time I speak of that, I don't have to talk about the rail line that goes through Wilmer and Litchfield?
That would be correct.
The next amendment is A18. Who has that amendment?
I wonder if this is the was the A5 yesterday. Is this the transit taxing district?
Where is it? Where is it?
Yesterday.
Well, Mr. Chair.
That is the door.
Mr. Chair.
I
don't know if the page. I did get a request from Representative Holbrook to be present. I think she's in another committee for this particular discussion. So
yeah.
I don't know if a page. Maybe Representative Magnus knows where she is, but. Okay. I think Representative Garofalo will be opposed. So.
Okay.
All right, we're fine.
Oh, okay. Representative Medora, do you want to move your amendment?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move Amendment A18, please. And. Members, this again is the expansion of the taxing district to include the cities of Farmington and Lakeville. I met with the chairs of government operations and taxes, and they are not interested in hearing this. They're fine with it going through this committee and being on this bill.
You want to explain the bill, Representative Medora?
Basically what this does, Mr. Chair, is that we have a little problem in our community with cities in the Dakota County area using transit services and not being part of the taxing district. We have the UPA expansion on the tails of our development plan right now. We also have we have a bus rapid transit line running on 77 with the idea that that line would run all the way through to the bottom of Lakeville. We have the UPA, which will be running through Burnsville, which also runs through Lakeville, and a piece of Farmington, and then we have the 35W BR2 line. Without expansion of the taxing district into Lakeville and Farmington, my local opt-out service, which is the MVTA, Minnesota Valley Transit Association, would not be able to bid on or operate that service. So at this point, this amendment here, we've tried other ways to work this out. I did have a bill that asked for the entire Seven County Metro area to be included as part of the taxing district. The governor has indicated that he will not sign a bill that includes that, but this particular amendment addresses our needs for the UPA and the two BRT bus routes that are planned, transit ways that are planned for the South Metro. So I'd appreciate the committee's acceptance of this.
I presume we have a witness or testifier on the amendment, I presume. Would you identify yourself, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Pat Groslow. I'm from Farmington.
He's here as a citizen.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, there are a couple testifiers here who would like to speak on regarding this.
Do you know how many I have?
There's three that I know of.
May I ask, are they all on, is there opposition in both sides with your testifiers?
I know that two of them are opposed. The third one, I can't.
When we get through those, I'll check the audience to it. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess, first of all, I'd like to thank the author of the amendment for telling me that she was going to do this and bringing forward this plan to raise the property taxes on the citizens of my district by about $400,000. Oh, that's right. I didn't get that call, did I? I didn't get notified about it. So, first of all, just a little bit of coaching for members. If you're going to be doing this sort of stuff, if you're going to be dumping a bomb of property tax increases that specifically targets a very select geographic area, a courtesy of a phone call might be appropriate. Maybe. Just possibly. I guess, Representative McGraw, I have a question for you from reading this amendment. What's the MBTA's position on this amendment?
They're pro this amendment. Mr. Chair, thank you. They're pro this amendment.
Well, Mr. Chairman and members, that's not true. MBTA does not support this amendment. We can get into it. Is the MBTA lobbyist here that could speak and confirm who's right, Representative Medora or myself?
Okay, we could have that happen.
Well, they're not here. So if they're in support of the amendment, I would expect they'd be here, Representative Medora. How about... clearly you're aware of the stakeholders involved in this, MBTA, the City of Lakeville, the Met Council, City of Farmington, very delicate conversations that are taking place right now with the City of Lakeville. Clearly you've spoken with them about this. Can you tell me what impact will this have on the negotiations internally and externally that are taking place between MBTA and the Lakeville City Council? What, do you want to talk to us about that a little bit?
Just a minute. Representative Garofalo, how many questions like this do you have?
Just a couple, Mr. Chairman. I think I'm a pretty reasonable guy.
I'm a little concerned about this is not a courtroom.
Sure, well, Mr. Chairman...
Probably should go this way.
Sure.
Open in the door.
Actually, Mr. Chair, I'm a regular attendee of the 35W Solutions Alliance, which Lakeville and Farmington do send representatives to, and MGTA is also a part of that, and we've discussed this at length in that committee, and the 35W Solutions Alliance also passed a resolution that asked for if we are going to expand with the UPA line and the BRT line through Burnsville and Lakeville, that the expansion of the taxing district be a part of that. So that information is documented, and you do have copies of that, sir. I see that you are on the distribution list for that organization.
So, Mr. Chairman, Representative Medora, I want to make very clear, the question I asked was, can you tell me about the negotiations that are taking place right now between the Lakeville City Council and the MBTA? The fact of the matter is you don't know, because either you didn't ask or you don't know the answer to the question. And that's not an opinion, Mr. Chairman, that's a fact. What we've got is a very delicate situation in the South Metro right now, where we've got people throwing bombs into a situation where reasonable people are trying to solve it. I am a transit supporter. I am an advocate of transit, much to the chagrin of some people in my caucus. Now, the fact of the matter is, if you look at this bill that in the testimony, it was brought up that we need this for the UPA. Well, that's interesting that we need it for the UPA. City of Farmington doesn't have a transit line that ends in the UPA. Only Lakeville. So based on geography, it's impossible for Farmington to be impacted. So we go to the City of Lakeville. Okay, the City of Lakeville. The City of Lakeville does not need to be in the transit taxing district to implement the UPA. That's not an opinion. That's a fact. And we're talking about a $900,000 property tax increase to the citizens of my district. And I'm just trying to figure out what solution is trying to be solved here. What is the problem at stake is trying to be resolved? In the testimony for the author of the amendment, it said for the UPA. That's false. That's not true. We're talking about the support of MBTA for this. MBTA does not support this amendment. And I don't think I'm a caustic bomb thrower in this chamber, So we've got an amendment here that targets two communities. Why isn't Andover in this? Andover's a huge stakeholder. They have lots of ridership in the system not paying the transit tax. Curious. I wonder why that is. And that, Mr. Chairman, the sad fact of the matter is that this issue temporarily at least was resolved when the Watson's lot was purchased in Apple Valley. We have a great problem in the South Metro. Too many people want to use transit. What a fantastic problem to have. And the lot was over capacity, so the Dakota County Rail Authority bought additional capacity. It's not full right now. It's the Watson's lot in Apple Valley adjacent to that lot. And if you're an advocate for transit, actually, I should say, if you're against transit, vote for the Medora Amendment. So guarantee us, if you force them into the transit passing district and actually have authority to say this, the city of Farmington will never join MVTA. They will join Lakeville and they will opt out and have their own service. And then members, do you know what happens? MVTA's ridership goes down. They offer less service and we have the service in our area. So if you're pro-transit, oppose this amendment. Besides that, I really don't feel passionately about anything, Mr. Chairman.
You have additional witnesses?
Mr. Chairman, I believe the city administrator of the city of Lakeville is here. Councilmember Christy Joe Fogarty from Farmington. And then I believe someone from that council wanted to
testify. Do they wish to testify or not?
Yep. I'm seeing nods, so. Mr. Chairman and members, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Can I just make a comment here? I'm not really going to be interested in going line for line here. The fact of the matter is this has been going on for about 15 years. The last 2 years it has escalated. The citizens of Apple Valley, Rosemount, Burnsville, and Egan, the governor's own home city, are picking up the capital costs for our transit in our area. Right now we have had two studies done that show that Lakeville and Farmington riders are not only using our lot, they're using it at the level of 60% of our lot space. The fact of the matter is these two cities want transit, they want to be engaged in that, and they are currently being represented by representatives who will not discuss this because they see it as a tax increase. There will be some dollars asked of these citizens to participate, but the citizens, again, of Egan, Apple Valley, Rosemount, and Burnsville have been picking up the cost of this for over 20 years. It's time for them to join the line. If Lakeville wants service all the way to the base of 77 Cedar Avenue, which the Dakota County Transit Authority has already put in as part of their long-term plan, it is time that they be in the taxing district. That's all we're asking for. And these riders are there. They have regularly communicated that they would like to have service all the way down into Lakeville. If Lakeville and Farmington would like to produce their own service and opt out, I think that that would be a foolish choice on behalf of the city. We have MVTA down there. They are prepared to provide more local service attached to the UPA transit stop. They are more than willing to work with the cities. We've been asking my city council, the city council in Rosemont, the city council in Egan, and the city council in Burnsville are all behind this amendment. Now, if they're not here today, it's because they were here 3 weeks ago when we met in the property tax division to have the entire seven-county metro area included as part of the tax, transit taxing district. So I am sorry that Mr. Garofalo feels that he did not have enough notice, but this has been something that has been going on in our community for over 2 years. And with the expansion of the UPA line, and with the expansion of the two new BRT lines running all the way down to Lakeville, it is time that Lakeville join the taxing district.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the impassioned entreaties of my friends from Dakota County, both the author of the amendment and the testifier from Farmington. I want to support my friend from Apple Valley, Representative Medor, and I ask the support of this committee. It is very frustrating to the residents of my district who are paying a property tax for the construction of park and rides in our communities, and they show up and they're full, and they're not full of other people necessarily who've paid the taxes to build those facilities. They're full of people from outside the transit taxing district. And maybe this is happening in other parts of the metro. It's just not something that Representative Medora and I are hearing about from constituents in those other parts of the metro. This is a solution to a problem in the South Metro. I sure would appreciate the support of this committee for the solution.
Representative Grappa.
Mr. Chairman and members, I'm reminded of the quote of former Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan, "Never has the opposite of the truth been so eloquently stated." The fact of the matter is the Watson's lot wasn't built with transit tax and district dollars. They don't own it. The Dakota County Regional Rail Authority owns it. Your citizens, Representative Morgan, Representative Mador, say it paid the same property tax as my citizens did. We did pay our way. The operating service, we're paying the same as you are. So this notion that somehow we're freeloaders is totally and utterly false. It's not true.
You have other testifiers?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Mason.
I would just like to add my two cents, Mr. Chair. Members, I served on the Minnesota Valley Transit Authority through most of the 90s, and we had the ongoing problem with Lakeville even then. And again, because all of us on the board obviously are transit advocates, we never took stronger action, thinking somewhere along the line, as the numbers got bigger, the city councils would start accepting responsibility for the inequities that were going on. And to date, that hasn't happened, so something needs to be resolved from a different action. So again, I support the amendment.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you. My name is Steve Melfi. I'm the city administrator for the city of Lakeville. I heard about this particular amendment about noon today, and I've made a few phone calls and tried to understand the basis for it. I've been the city administrator in Lakeville for about 4 years, and it is a touchy subject in southern Dakota County. Lakeville is on the developing edge, and we're not in the transit taxing district at this point. Our citizens occasionally have been asked what their opinion is relative to transit services. And as I think you'd find in any community, there is a split among our community as to what their position would be. Like the rest of the community, most of our folks are taking vehicles, not taking transit, but there's still about half of our residents who are interested in having transit services in Lakeville. Perhaps with the most recent transit bill, there'd be a chance to get buses down here, but for a town of 53,000, when we've had discussions with Met Transit about what can we expect for actual service to our community, we get three buses, 120 people basically, could be taking a bus. For that, the question comes in to the city of Lakeville. Are you willing to raise taxes in Lakeville of $700,000? Would you, as an elected official, vote for a tax increase of $700,000 so 120 people a day can take a bus? Now, the reality is many of our residents are traveling north into Burnsville and Apple Valley to hop on a bus. But the transit taxing district pays for capital items. It pays for transit stations, and it pays for buses. Neither of those are in Lakeville or in Farmington. And until maybe recently, we'll see what happens with actual funding, it's never been possible to extend those services into the community. It is fair to assume as the capacity to expand the system moves, I think it's fair to assume that Lakeville will take a stronger look at it. We have been part of the I-35 solutions. We've been part of the Cedar Corridor group. We've been helping with the planning to someday get transit into our community. But it's never been promised to us. It's never been indicated that we can actually get transit services to Lakeville. And therefore, we've chosen not to have a voluntary tax increase. On the I-35 solution, the legislative policy of the I-35 solution is the whole 7-county metro ought to come in, not two communities. For the MBTA, I spoke with the director of that today when I found out about this, and I asked their position on this bill, and they said they are neutral. They're officially in favor of a 7-county solution. They are not in favor. They haven't expressed opposition or favor to this amendment. So, if it's a 7-county solution, those two groups that I've heard mentioned would express that they are in favor of that. But to cherry-pick two communities who aren't going to get anything more out of this than a tax increase and not necessarily any service, our community would be opposed to that. My council has been on record as saying that when and if it's possible to have service in our community, then we'll analyze whether or not it's worth a $700,000 tax increase. But until then, they'd be crucified in their community for voting in to get 120 people on a bus.
Representative Madure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Milkey, are you trying to tell me that you have not had any discussions with Dakota County and Dan Crom, who's in charge of transit development, for the Cedar Avenue corridor going all the way down to Lakeville? No. Are you honestly going to sit here today and tell me that you have...
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, can I just... You're honestly sitting here today telling me that you have no idea whether or not there are plans for the city of Lakeville to benefit from long-range transit planning to develop transit all the way down to the base of Lakeville. That's what you're sitting here today telling me.
Mr. Malkin.
Mr. Chairman, no, that's not what I said. What I said was, we are a part of that planning process. We understand that there is an effort to bring service into Lakeville someday, but there is not an effort at this point to be able to deliver those transit services to the community. That's why we are participating in long-range planning, because we know it's a question of if we have services, not when, not if. So, have I been a part of planning for the last 4 years for that service? Yes. Have I ever been given an indication that it's actually going to make it to our community? The funding has never allowed for it. So we participate in the long-range planning for our community, and it includes transit. In fact, we just finished our own transit plan that we paid for out of our own money to plan for and understand what the transit services need to be for our community. And that's out for comment by our neighboring communities. I am also, just recently, started to attend MBTA board meetings as a way of increasing our relationship with our neighboring communities that are in MBTA. But it also ought to be understood that by putting us in the transit taxing district, that doesn't mean we join MBTA. That means that we have to pay taxes towards capital expenses, buses and stations. Doesn't mean that our service is going to be provided by MBTA. That's a decision between us, the Met Council, and MBTA.
Representative Earhart.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. What's the status of the City Avenue and the 35 busways?
Mr. Chair, my understanding the status of the I-35 is that it is part of the Urban Partnership Agreement. We've begun discussions with Met Council now for the actual planning for a station in Lakeville. The actual service to that station has not been identified to us yet as to what it would be, if it's going to be, but it's been made very clear to us that if we actually want the service to come into our community, we'd have to join the transit taxing district. But we haven't got a clue yet. It's too early to know whether or not we'll actually be able to bring a bus into Lakeville.
And Mr. Chairman, what about the Cedar Avenue?
Mr. Chairman, with regard to Cedar Avenue, there is planning going on to identify. In fact, we've been a part of planning for eventual transit services and expansion of the bus rapid transit from Apple Valley to Lakeville. Today, there is discussions going on that involves Met Council, MBTA, the City of Lakeville, Dakota County, to actually plan the location of that station. And Dakota County has identified monies in the federal grant to purchase that. It would not come online until there's operating dollars available for it. The UPA may be the answer to that, but it's not been identified to Lakeville that it's a certainty.
Well, Mr. Chairman, my understanding is that though they knew already done, we've been talking about it for quite a while, that so, how about helping out with joining the taxing district here? Right. 60% of the people, according to their accounts, are already being, the spaces are in the parking lot, are already being used, and we've heard that for a number of years. And we can't be more, I hope, a year or two out on the other two busways. Seems to me you ought to speed up the discussion and join the fellows here.
Mr. Melky.
Mr. Chairman and Representative, we have participated for the last 4 years to help Apple Valley get the funds from the state of Minnesota to expand that so that the parking problems they've been incurring are taken care of. As Representative Garofalo said, the money to help get that state bond are paid by everybody in the state, not just the people in the transit taxing district. Therefore, Lakeville has been helping. We're trying to get expansion of a large system. One of the things that I would suggest to you that I see too often is you put small stations very close to large stations, and they end up being a waste of capital dollars, and you end up getting one or two buses, and it doesn't end up paying off anything. The Cedar Avenue area where the station is intended to occur won't come online for land use planning for another 10 years. Why would you build a station and run buses to that when the area around it, for about a mile around it, is absolutely farmland and will be for another 10 years.
Representative Housen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I don't want to prolong the discussion other than I have a little piece of this because I've been told in no uncertain terms I'm to put the money for the UPA in my bonding bill, and so I really thought all of this was pretty much a given, and maybe the gentleman at the table isn't even the person prepared to answer this, but it sounded as though it's clear to you that the expectation is you will join the taxing district when that comes to pass. But how does that decision, how and when does that decision happen?
Mr. Melke?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I'm probably not the expert on that.
Okay.
However, what's been imparted to me is that Lakeville is part of the long-term plan for I-35 solutions and ultimately the BRT. For the actual service to come to Lakeville is going to require that we join the transit taxing district. The way I understand the law today, that takes a vote by our city council and negotiations with the Met Council over how that occurs. So from Lakeville's perspective, we support the UPA. It's in our legislative policies to support the UPA. We have been very clear with the Met Council, but that doesn't mean we expect service to come to Lakeville until we are confident that the service will be worthwhile for us to voluntarily raise our property taxes by $700,000.
Any further questions as a witness? No, thank you very much, Mr. Melke.
You're welcome. Thank you.
To another witness, testifier.
Yes. Good evening. My name is Christy Jo Fogarty, and I'm on the City Council in Farmington. And clearly, Farmington has no plans to have any kind of capital investment put into our city anytime in the future. And when Mr. Garofalo refers to negotiations, he's referring to Farmington. I've been on the council for 6 years, and 4 years ago, Apple Valley wanted to start doing permitting and only allow permits to be issued for that Watson's lot and for the Carmike lot where that bus station is that we're talking about to residents who were in the transit taxing district. And that brought me to the table, and that actually brought me here to the Capitol to talk to legislators and to talk to the members of the Apple Valley City Council. To be honest, at that point, Farmington was a little unaware that we were contributing to the tax, we were contributing to the system to the degree that we were. That brought us to the table with the Met Council and to discuss coming into the transit tax conditions, taxing district incrementally, and coming to the table. So when I hear people say for 15 years nothing's been done about that, that's completely untrue. Farmington did come to the table. We're still negotiating. And the forcing of the taxing districts when we're trying to be good stewards seems terribly unfair. We are working on a solution. Farmington actually does very little, and I'm listening to some of the numbers being thrown out there, and the 60% that Representative Maduri refers to is not just Lakeville and Farmington. The 60% was part of a study that they did about who was parking at that park and ride when they wanted a permit, and it said 60% were not Apple Valley residents. That does not necessarily mean that it is Farmington and Lakeville. There were many contributors to that. Farmington has talked about coming into the district, even though they've told us that guaranteed just about for 10 years, we will not get any kind of capital improvements in Farmington. We will not see a park and ride. We will not see bus service there. Monies were just invested in putting a new park and ride at 167th and Pilot Knob, but no services were given there. There's no direct bus service, so it sits empty. It was a poor use of capital dollars, and it's frustrating for us when we're in our negotiations to want to come into the district when we see dollars wasted like that. I just heard about this amendment at 9 o'clock last night, and it directly impacts my city. We're not a very big city. This affects us to the tune of about $240,000. That's a lot of money in Farmington. There is truth that we sit on that 35W group. Councilmember Dave Kritzloff, who could not be here today, he does sit there. And I talked to him earlier today, and he had no idea that this was coming until last night either. So to say that we've been hearing about it and we've been known about it, we know that it's been discussed several times, but we absolutely had no idea that this was going to be put in an amendment today.
Any questions as witness? No, thank you very much. Is there another testifier, Representative Graffa? Are there individuals? Individuals or not?
No, Mr. Chairman and members, I just want to kind of finish on a somewhat positive note as much as I can. I do want to thank Representative Hornstein for during the summer. He took time out from his very busy schedule as the highly respected chairman of the transit committee, right?
Maybe until now.
No, he was nice enough to come down and actually, you know, view the lot where people are parking at, to view the 157th park and ride lot that Councilmember Fogarty referred to, where we can see what the issues at hand are, what the problems are. And he took time out of his schedule, and I do appreciate that. It means a lot to me, and especially to the constituents of our area. Members, I want to reiterate, as you heard from both Lakeville and Farmington, that these are negotiations that are ongoing. We are working on finding a solution. It's a great problem to have. Too many people want to use our transit services. And I hope members will listen to the testimony and vote accordingly. And I think the Met Council is going to be speaking here.
I think we're good. Yeah. Are there other testifiers? Is the Met Council prepared to testify or not?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Judd Shetton. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council. And the committee, as they've heard from the testimony, this has been a long-standing, ongoing issue for both Lakeville, Apple Valley, Farmington, and the other cities. But they're also correct when they talk about the MBTA or the opt-outs and what they are supporting as far as the seven-county solution. This is not an issue that is just, an issue in Dakota County. It's really an issue. The transit taxing district is an issue that has impact all across the region. We've got issues like this up in the Ramsey, in Hennepin County, just outside of Ramsey and Dayton, and up in Ham Lake, and areas that just lie outside of the taxing district. And in the past, there have been numerous efforts here at the legislature to try to correct this. I am here on behalf of the Met Council to let you know I've been asked by Representative Holberg and the governor to give the committee an idea where the governor's office is on this. And the governor has some concerns about this being included in this particular bill because he believes that there are tax issues, property tax issues that go along with this bill. From the council, I will tell you that this is a long-standing issue. I hope at some point we will be able to address it. I want to make the point that I don't think it is just a Farmington-Lakeville issue. And if the legislature were to address this, I would hope that they would address it at as a seven-county issue. But at this point, we are not able to support this because the governor believes that this is a tax issue. And I know Mr. Burris, and it was mentioned earlier that this bill would not have to go to the tax committee. And there are definite property tax issues that are involved with this specific amendment, and I think that it would have to go there.
Hi.
Representative Lador?
Well, actually, Representative Earhart.
Oh, Representative.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Fetlin, I do appreciate you coming in and saying in defense, and you're right, this is not a Lakeville Farmington issue. The fact of the matter is, though, is that I have an opt-out service down there that needs to be able to bid on the UPA and the bus rapid transit for 35W, and it cannot do it without the expansion of the taxing district. And, well, it is true. That is true, Mr. Fetlin, and that's exactly what I've been told. And we are looking at right now, even this morning, at the 35W solutions. And again, I would highly encourage Representative Holberg and Representative Garofalo, their representative cities are a part of that group, to attend those meetings and to voice these levels of concern. MDTA was present this morning at that meeting. I asked them point blank again, are you allowed to bid on service that goes beyond 160th Street in Apple Valley? And they said no, that they are restricted from doing that unless those cities are part of the taxing district and that boundary line is moved down, they cannot bid on the service. And I am not prepared with the money and investment that MDPA has made in local bus service for our South Metro area for them not to be able to bid on that, because Farmington and Lakeville does not want to step up to the plate and do what's right by their citizens.
The citizens demand the service. They're complaining that they're not getting direct bus route service. It's because we can't afford to buy another bus. They want service from the pilot not stop. We need to be able to afford to buy another bus. We do that through the capital account. The capital account that is paid for by the, again, the residents of Apple Valley, Rosemount, Burnsville, and Egan. And that is the issue here, Mr. Chair. We have development of transit down in the South Metro area. We have Dakota County that is signing for moving forward because the cities will not join the taxing district. I am more than happy to go and do a seven-county metro taxing district. I would love to do that because I would love to expand metro mobility service. But I can't. And I have a governor here that refuses to move on this issue. So my problem today is UPA, the Urban Partnership Agreement, and service by my local MDPA opt-out. My other issue is the two bus rapid transit lines that are planning to move to Lakeville. So I would like the committee to again extend the courtesy to my cities that have been picking up the tab and to say it's time for us to move off of this discussion and let's hope that Farmington and Lakeville then help the other cities in Dakota County to join the taxing district and we can all move on from this discussion.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mador, regarding the UPA, Lakeville or Farmington do not have to be forced into the transit taxing district by law. If Lakeville chooses not to come into the transit taxing district, then they will not receive that parking ride lot at County 46. I mean, that parking ride lot was part of the proposed plan. But if they are not in the transit taxing district at that point, we can't give them that service. And that service would have to be, they can come into the transit taxing district voluntarily, and to voluntarily do that, we will work out a service agreement of some sort or another. But if we don't have that in place by the time that service is, or by the time we're supposed to put in those capital improvements, then it won't happen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, I am very sorry that we are spending this level of time.
We won't spend too much more
time. I understand. Mr. Sellin, are you then prepared to tell me today that I can tell the cities of Rosemount, Egan, Burnsville, and Apple Valley that they can begin permitting? Because those dollars, that bus is being paid for by the citizens of Rosemount, Apple Valley, Egan, and Burnsville. They are not being paid for by the citizens of these two communities. And if they're going to continue to ride the bus, then my city needs to be able to say, you know what, we're picking up the tab for this, and we want to be sure that only our citizens are given the first-class service that they deserve. So are you prepared, because you fought us on the permit. You fought us on Apple Valley on us being able to have a permit. So are you telling me today that I can offer this to these four cities that have been carrying this burden for 20 years?
Mr. Sussman? Mr. Chair, Representative Mador, you know, it's difficult for me to sit here in front of folks that are obviously transit advocates and have to have this argument, and I apologize for that. But on the permitting issue, the arguments that the council stated 2 years ago on that, and back when Representative Abrams was here, is that the regional transit capital or the regional transit bonds that you're talking about here, the bonds that we levy in order to do capital improvements in the transit taxing district, those funds also leverage federal funds. And those federal funds, you cannot permit, you cannot restrict any type of access for the buses, for the park and rides because of that. And that is you know, not an opinion that the council is making. It's an opinion of the federal government. Because we actually checked on that.
Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You mentioned that the governor was opposed to the seven county expansion of the transit tax, and I can understand that because he doesn't like to increase taxes. I don't remember him, and you may refresh my memory, objection to the citizens of Hampton County paying half the operating cost of the Hiawatha line. Do you remember him saying anything about that?
Mr. Schlesinger. Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, is that a rhetorical question? Or because I I think that's pretty obvious.
And the answer is?
I think that when the operations of the Hiawatha LRT line were being negotiated in 2003, that we were in the midst of a $4.5 billion deficit, and one of the issues that that were worked out as far as transit and LRT operating was that the counties would pay a 50% share of that operating. That same that same agreement was put in place on North Star and on the Central Corridor. However, the passage of House File 2800 and the regional sales tax has changed that, and that is now law, and things will be funded in a different way. But I can't do anything about that.
Any further questions, Representative Holberg?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry that I was stuck in Commerce with another bill. But I think that, and I know I don't have the benefit of knowing what all has gone on, so I apologize for that. It seems like you must have been on it for a while, looking at people's faces around the table, so I'll try and be brief. Lakeshore has been negotiating with MnDOT and Met Council to try and work out a service expansion agreement. There was a bill a couple years ago that allowed for a feathering in of the rates and allowed for some flexibility. If, in fact, people really want something to move forward, obviously what's happening now isn't working. I think that would be a really good tool to use, and I don't know if Representative Hornstein and I talked earlier today, I don't know if he prepared that as an amendment or not. We had discussion around that, but it is a tax increase, and my discussions with the governor's office, I have no doubt that this would cause this bill to be vetoed, but the carrot versus the stick approach, and it's my understanding that should Lakeville not be able to work out some kind of agreement, the investments, the UPA investments for the additional park and ride spots are not dependent on Lakeville becoming part of the district. What would happen is that there would just be those available slots would just go into those areas which are part of the district.
Representative Hausman.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Sutton, it does sound though as though I can cut back that amount for UPA a little bit. I've been listening very, very carefully about what can and cannot, or will and will not be built, and I think there's at least one park and ride I heard you say would not be done, so we can cut back that amount for UPA a little
bit,
I think.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, the general obligation bonding money that we are asking for the UPA is $16.672 million. Of that $16 million, about $6 million of it is a grant. Actually, about $7 million of that is a grant to Minneapolis for them to rebuild 2nd and Marquette in downtown. The remainder of it is along Cedar Avenue and along 35W. And the park and rides that we're talking about being built with those general obligation bonding dollars are all within the transit taxing district. The $400,000, I guess, there was the $400,000, excuse me, was going for an interchange on 77 and 62. But the money that was in the general obligation bonding bill is all part of the transit taxing district. The piece that is in Lakeville is on a trunk highway, and that could probably be taken through trunk highway funds. But so that is not, we wouldn't need general obligation bonds for that. But aside from all the technical piece, I would also like to advocate for keeping the $16.672 million in the bonding bill, because as I've mentioned to the committee before, it is a all or nothing. It is an all or nothing match that we need to that $133 million. Mm-hmm. I think that there are many members who, sitting around the table here, who will benefit from that greatly, and I think that is a great opportunity for us to do that. And like I said, I not enjoying sitting up here having to have this debate with you, but at the same time I need to make sure that I ask you to please keep the full, actually get your bill up additional $4 million so we're fully funded. So we'll have that conversation again, but thanks for putting up with me for a little bit.
Any further questions? If not, is there any other testimony? I think we're about due to take a vote. Apparently, no other testifiers. Representative Medora, do you want to renew your
I
motion?
Would like to, again, renew my motion to move Amendment A18 to pass. And it would just catch on to the show. That's correct.
Did you say to taxes?
No, to pass.
Oh, to pass.
No, I didn't say that, Mr. Chair.
You've heard the motion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary?
No.
The motion passed, or the amendment passed.
Thanks, member.
The next amendment is 21, is that right?
19.
If we have a 19? 19 is not, we're not going to take 19.
And 20, Mr. Chair. We're not doing
it. 821 for Ben Hornstein.
Okay. Thank you, members. I would like to move the A21 amendment. Mr. Chair and members, this is legislation that was passed earlier in the Education Policy Committee, and it was referred to this committee. It is Jim Dabney's House file, and this relates to the legislative auditor's report on school bus safety, and simply had some requirements for contracted school transportation services. And I have Tim Nelson from the Service Employees International Union that can explain the amendment.
I just explained the amendment. It's not testimony.
Yeah.
That's correct. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the A21 amendment, as stated earlier, was passed by the Education Policy Committee and referred here. The amendment itself is focusing on the 45% of school districts that currently contract out over 50% of their services and is laying out certain items that school districts should gather in order to make sure that the quality of service, experience level of the drivers, turnover rate, does the contractor have a recruitment and retention plan? It's basically laying out those types of things that school boards should take a look at before awarding public funds to a contractor. If you look at Section 2, lines 2.18, there are two sections there. Subdivision 1 addresses the issue of pre-trip inspections and ensuring that drivers are paid for that time that they inspect their buses. And then Subdivision 2, lines 2.22, is the right to refuse. And that basically states that if a school bus meets the out-of-service definition of Minnesota Rules, Part 7470.0600, meaning out of the, that shouldn't be allowed on the road, that they have the right to refuse to drive that bus off the lot, basically. And that the contractor or the school district needs to provide an alternative bus for that.
Any questions about the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm just trying to digest this. I know that we had a bill, an amendment that was put on the other day in transportation. Is this related to that Type A bus at all?
No, it's not.
Yeah, follow up, Mr. Chair.
Representative Bieber.
Thank you. And when you're talking about schools that contract for more than 50% of their transportation, are these typically schools that are using local drivers, or are they schools that are using contract drivers? Can you clarify this for me a little bit?
I don't know if I could actually answer that question. I'm focusing on all school districts that contract out for services. And I think it would vary depending on where in the state the particular business is located. Certainly here in the metro area, we have drivers from the surrounding metro communities, whereas out in the rural areas tend to be folks from those communities that are providing the service.
Mr. Chair, follow-up.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as I heard you discuss this amendment a little bit, it sounded to me like this was being brought forward as concerned safety issues with the transportation process. And do you have any documentation on the need? I mean, are there an inordinate number of accidents that are taking place that precipitated this amendment?
Ms. Nelson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Severson, I would argue that it's a quality of service issue, not strictly just accident rates. We recognize that transporting kids to school in a school bus is the safest mode of transportation. What we're trying to address here are more parental concerns for who has the accountability for the managing of the student transportation system within the school district. So more incidents, more what's the driver, what's the experience of the driver, is the bus arriving on time, was the kid dropped off at the wrong bus stop, how is bullying being handled on the bus. So driver experience level and the quality of the driver and the quality of the service is equally as important as, you know, keeping track of accident rates within our school bus system.
Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm baffled as to what this has to do with the nexus of this whole issue, which I believe was the legislative auditor's report, which said that school bus transportation in the state actually is in pretty darn good shape. They do a fine job. I mean, one of the things we looked at was things like seatbelt use, injuries other than deaths, accidents that they're involved in, and it looks like it's pretty much the safest way to go. And so I'm looking for the problem that we're trying to address here, and I think I sense something else going on, because I'm looking on section subdivision 3 of section 1. I'm failing to see how driver recruitment and retention, because I believe this applies to private companies. That's where you're aiming at here, the companies that contract with the school district.
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, we would like to have focused on all school districts for this type of stuff. The language you have before you is compromise language that we arrived at working with school districts. And so, although this particular amendment and bill only focuses on the 45% that contract out, we would certainly hope that all school districts are looking at this type of information.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that kind of answers my question, because what we're after here, apparently, is the private carriers that contract with school districts in this state, and we're asking the state to reach into their business operations, including things like how you recruit, what plans you have to recruit, how you're going to retain qualified drivers, an explanation of wage and rate benefits. That's just in subdivision, whatever that was. Section 2, driver pay, is now a safety issue, apparently. This sounds like collective bargaining in the statute book for the state of Minnesota is what it sounds like. Actually, it sounds like an employee manual, because if I had a company, I had a company, and we had agreements like this, even though it was not a union shop, we took care of our employees, and we spelled out very clearly what expectations were and what they got paid for. I just can't imagine anybody not doing this. But codifying this in the statute of the state of Minnesota on behalf of private companies is just, I think, a mandate we're laying on school districts around this state. And it's not even the school district members. We're talking about people who do business with school districts. We're mandating that all kinds of things happen that I don't know that we have any business or any need or call for happening. This is a scary precedent I'm looking at here. And I'm thinking we should just reject this entire amendment, for goodness sake. I'm thinking about the safety report, the work that Representative Dabney and Senator Hand did all summer. This has nothing close to those requirements. And I'm thinking if my school district is here, they'd probably be having a cow right now, seeing what we're thinking about laying on their budget, on their operations, and things like that. And I'm baffled as to why we're proceeding with this.
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, this amendment does speak to the Office of Legislative Auditor report. In that, the Legislative Audit report pointed out massive inconsistencies amongst our school districts on how they felt or how they gauged their responsibility for oversight with the management of their student transportation systems. We have some school districts that do lay out these types of things in a contract and expect contractors to provide this type of information, whereas there were other school districts that admitted they contract out so that they don't have to worry about looking at anything. And although the direct hiring of drivers and the direct supervision of drivers and buses rely, you know, depends on or lies within the contractor, the management and the oversight of that system still rests upon our local school districts to make sure that that's overseen.
And I might add, Mr. Chairman, that those are independent school districts. There's 351 of them in this state that I think would be terribly insulted if they heard the notion behind this that somehow we here don't believe that the transportation officer in that school district is quite capable of figuring out how to take care of the kids in Windham or Worthington or Grand Marais, for crying out loud. This is another one of our one-size-fits-all, we're going to run it all from St. Paul ideas, people. And beyond the cost of implementing this, beyond the just the philosophy of running it from here, I think there's a reason we have 351 independent school districts in this state, because those folks pick up their own kids, and if Earl wants to run the bus in the afternoon and coach basketball in the evening, that's up to somebody in Eagle Lake to make up their minds. We're not going to make that decision from here, and we're going to force them to do that with this, or we're going to force the school district to buy their own buses. And then we're into a whole other discussion about costs, we're into a whole other discussion about labor relations, and oh, by the way, they'd be school district employees. I have a hunch it would probably be easier for you to unionize them too, if that's where we're really trying to go with this.
Mr. Leader, Representative Beard, I do want to point out that SEIU's reason for being involved in student transportation are, you know, there's multiple reasons which far outreach any kind of new member organizing. We represent bus drivers. They want the standards within their industry to be maintained. You know, they view themselves as professional drivers and want to, you know, keep that the case. We also represent food service workers, custodians, and other members in school districts. And if student transportation dollars are not being spent effectively for the quality of service, then unfortunately it's those members of ours that are the first to be laid off. And so, you know, I will be the first to admit we take a lot of great pride in organizing new members. SEIU, organizes new members, and we take pride in that. But on this particular issue, you know, there are a number of reasons that we would advocate for this bill.
Representative Ruth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. just a point of clarification. I serve on the Legislative Audit Commission, and this bill greatly expands the scope of what the legislative auditor said. None of this was discussed, frankly. We needed some oversight, but these specifics absolutely were not, and this does greatly exceed the expanse of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hoyce. You know, we had this little bit of this discussion before, but really, Representative Beard is right on. This is about unfunded mandates. This is about putting more requirements on schools that are already hurting, particularly in my district, about making them kowtow to some of what we think at St. Paul are the requirements to keep our kids safe. I haven't had any problems in my district. So why are we continually putting unfunded mandates on our counties and on our school districts? This is exactly what, when you go door knock and you talk to people at the door, you tell them about unfunded mandates, they go and kind of go, what's that? And then you start telling them about what it's about, and they go, what the heck are you people doing down there? And so when we start micromanaging the school districts like we're doing in this particular amendment, we are putting the interests in the groups who come down and speak to us rather than the interests in the people that are at the doors that we're knocking on. And so, members, I would ask that you oppose this amendment, and I would ask for a roll call.
Representative Stevenson asked for a roll call. Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have some experience negotiating contracts for my local teachers union. And believe me, as a local contract negotiator, I have found it particularly onerous to see the state legislature sticking its nose into the business between the school board and the local union in negotiating the terms and conditions of employment. And I wouldn't support what I felt was the school board, the state doing that to school boards and locals, no matter what group is being represented. However, I'm looking at this amendment, and what I see in here are a lot of reporting requirements. I see some attempt from the state to set some basic safety standards, which I think is entirely appropriate when we're talking about the safety of our kids. And I don't see this as micromanaging the collective bargaining process in any particular group or school district throughout the state. I do have one question, however, for Ms. Nelson. Because I am also, as a teacher, particularly sensitive to increasing the unfunded mandates on school districts, because we want that money going into the classroom to teach our kids. So I'd like you to address Representative Severson's concern about this being an additional unfunded mandate for our school. Ms. Dillon.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, as I stated earlier, if the education dollars aren't being spent effectively, it is our members that are the first to go out the door. And so we do understand the need to not be placing unfunded mandates on our school districts. At the same time, this information, as far as the types of contractors and quality of service that our public dollars are going to, we believe it's essential that school boards take a look at this type of information when spending these public dollars. And so, I mean, we'll be the first to admit, you know, we know times are tight. We're out there working on the levy campaigns like everyone else, and it's our folks taking the hit. And so, that's what I'd have to say about unfunded mandates, you know.
Any further questions? If not, who made that motion? Representative Hornstein? Or Steve?
Yeah.
Oh, the roll call vote, yeah. Okay, we got a vote, that's right. I'll think a little bit. The clerk will call a roll.
Earhart?
Yes.
Beard?
Nay.
Doty?
Yes.
Houseman?
Yes.
Over? Hornstein?
Yes.
Portman? Galen? Medora?
Yes.
Magnus? Mason?
Yes.
Morgan?
Yes.
Morrow?
Yes.
Nelson?
Yes.
Ruth?
No.
Stevenson?
No.
Slocum? Leader?
Yes.
Yeah. 10-3. The amendment is adopted. I goofed up. We had another testifier. Mr. Botsvich. I forgot all about that.
Yeah.
Maybe it should be. What are we doing this case?
Mr. Chairman, Gary Botsvich from Minnesota School Bus Operators Association. I'll be brief since your motion's already carried. We oppose this motion, amendment this morning, lost on an 11-9 vote this morning, and the arguments that the representative made are right on. This is not good legislation. The legislative auditor's report identified two problems: type 3 bans, which is the result of the accident in Forest Lake, Minnesota. That's being addressed by a specific legislation. Moving through, the other item that they identified was contracts between local independent school districts private sector providers. They found contracts that vary from one page to 200 pages. So Department of Education under Dr. Melcher already have begun to draft a model, or at least a couple of different versions of model contracts that will address some of the concerns raised in the auditor's report. There's also another piece of legislation that's just starting to move, Mr. Chairman, relating to a establishment and office of school transportation. That is a better place to collect some of this information, not individually school districts. The school districts don't want this information. It's basically there to organize school districts. It's not just that, Mr. Chairman, but this is, Dr. Kite gave me this letter a few minutes ago, and I'm sure I only have one copy at all for the record. Here's one sentence. However, this bill goes too far with any appreciative increase in safety. Also, the Minnesota School Boards Association opposes this amendment. So I apologize that I wasn't able to squeeze in there before the vote. I realized that I probably wouldn't have changed any votes, but just be aware that we are opposed to this language and will continue to oppose it as the process moves forward. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Bostic. And Jordan, you identified tape 3. Have you looked at the amendment? I don't believe that's identified. I was just wondering if you had two amendments that you're kind of concerned about.
Mr. Chairman, no, I've got the correct amendment.
Yes. Okay.
But I think I referenced type 3 bans, which is right. Being addressed
indirect.
Bingham's bill, which I think you may have heard already.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't in this amendment.
That's right, no, I understand that. This is excess, Mr. Chairman, and yeah. Totally unnecessary.
Representative Earhart
has a
question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Where did you reference the 11-3 vote, or where was that taken?
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman and Representative Earhart. That occurred in
Senate.
It's been a long day. House. Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. House Education Policy this morning. Hmm. So that was amended to the Omnibus Education Policy Bill.
Okay.
So this language is now in two bills: Transportation Bill and the Education Policy Bill. I understand that for a reason. So,
Mr. Chair, no, that's not correct. This was referred to Transportation.
You're right. That's correct. Oh. It was not included in the Omnibus Bill, but rather heard and sent here.
Okay.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Well, it's been a long day.
Mr. Chairman, I don't move for reconsideration. I think that we have some very strong presentation here from Mr. Black. And I think that we ought to, with that in mind, or his testimony in mind, ought to reconsider the bill.
Representative Earhart moves for reconsideration. All in favor say aye.
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 Contrary?
No.
We'll reconsider House, or the amendment, A-18, was it? A-21. Okay, open for A-18. We're open for discussion, Representative Earhart.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I were calling, I would say that the reconsideration motion failed, but...
I thought it sounded like it passed.
All right. Well, Mr.
Delato, no pass.
In the past, I will say that I think there's some strong arguments just presented that we didn't have. This is the first I've seen of this, and I did see it once before, but I didn't realize the impact on the various organizations that you mentioned, which should have a bearing on our decision here.
Any further comment or question? It is A-21 rather than A-18. If not, all in favor, Rick
Chairman, please. Roll call it again, please. And
clerk will call the roll.
This is a revote. Okay, I vote no.
Beard?
No.
Doty?
Yes.
Hausman?
Yes.
Colbert? Hornstein?
Yes.
Portman? Phelan? Mador?
Yes.
Magnus? Mason?
I'm going to vote no.
Excuse me, I didn't hear you.
No.
Morgan?
Yes.
Morrow?
Pass.
Nelson?
Yes.
Ruth?
No.
Severson?
No.
Slocum?
Yes.
Leader?
Yes. Eight to five. The amendment is adopted. Thank you. The next amendment is A22.
22.
Representative Medora.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. This is just an inquiry. I'm sorry, can you please tell me what amendments have passed? I have four amendments sitting here, and I just, or which ones we haven't done yet, I guess, is the better question. I'm sorry. Is that correct?
We have three amendments left.
Okay, 14, 19, and 22?
Or 22, MB1, and A14.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman,
where
can I get my hands on those amendments?
Beg your pardon?
I got 14. I don't have
21. Am I wrong?
You said 14, MB1, and A22. Oh, she hasn't handed out MB1. We've got A22 before it's handed out to us.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure whose amendment this is. It looks pretty simple. It's just an effective date change, but I don't know if
you know what it changes, Representative Horst?
Mr. Burris can maybe shed some light on what section of the bill this is.
Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair, members, the A22 amendment changes a due date on the credit card buddy report.
Oh, that's correct. Yeah, that's yours, Mr. Chairman.
It's mine?
Yeah.
Well, I'll move the amendment, sir.
Okay. It's a good amendment. Vote for it, members.
This changes the date on the credit card for 1 year, basically not a year, 4 years, August 1st to January 1st, for the implementation of the credit card with Department of Vehicle Services, isn't it? Or study. The study, right. Any questions on that? Not all in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary. The amendment is adopted. The next amendment. The next amendment is... MB1, right? Next amendment is MB1.
Mr. Chairman, this is Representative Kalin's amendment. I would speak strongly against it. He's significantly expanding the scope of the Urban Partnership Agreement. I spoke with the Met Council. This would be way beyond the scope of the project. It involved changing the disposition of these corridors to a potentially toll corridor rather than rail or bus. And I don't know if Mr. Shetland's still in the room, but...
Representative Kalin, they're getting him too. They're checking on Representative Kalin.
Okay. I guess we won't. We should give him the courtesy of speaking in favor of it. But I would just say to the members, I'm strongly opposed to it. And Mr. Shetman could probably testify.
Representative Kalin, we should let him come. I thought he was here. We could temporarily lay this aside to take the next amendment.
Okay.
Why don't we temporarily lay this one aside till he comes? Representative Kalin comes. We'll take amendment A14.
Mr. Chair, the A14 amendment is my amendment, members. I know it'll break everyone's heart. This takes out the Morrow Amendment out of our bill and puts us in line with what passed through public safety yesterday. I hope for your support.
You want to move the amendment?
I move the A14 amendment, Mr. Chair.
You want to explain it further? Russ and Beard.
Just I'm looking for you. I have a question. Okay. Line 1.4 says page 17 of the section 8. There is no section 8, unless I'm missing something. On page 17. Is that yesterday's version?
It might be.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair, members, that is correct. There is obviously no Section 8. That should read page 17, delete Section 31. This was an update from yesterday's work, and that must have gotten missed.
Thank you, Representative.
No extra charge, Mr. Chairman.
Russian Moore, will you have further comment or any questions?
I have no further comment, Mr. Chair.
Any questions? Not all in favor of the Amendment A14, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary? Amendment is adopted. Is Representative Killen?
It is no more.
Oh, Frank, Mr. Hornstein, you have an oral amendment to somewhere?
What, excuse me?
You have an oral amendment?
Well, there's another more amendment, the MB/HRD amendment. We can take that, perhaps.
We don't have that.
Okay. So I'll move it.
Oh, we did?
Page 35, deleting section 53, and page 36, deleting section 54, if Representative Morrow wants to speak to that.
I will, Mr. Chair.
Just a minute, children. Everyone have
Mr. Chair, Representative Hornstein is correct. This is on members on page 35, section 53, on page 36, section 54. This actually refers to a bill I never introduced. It was language I had jacketed, but it mistakenly found its way into the bill. And members, I apologize for that. I'm not sure why that happened either. But this language was never introduced in committee.
And it's a good idea to take it out.
So I believe that we should take it out. It's section 53 on page 35, members, and section 54 on page 36.
Mr. Burdick, would you repeat that, or do you have it? You just want to repeat it for
Mr. Chair, the oral amendment is page 35, delete section 53, page 36, delete section 54.
Thank you. Any questions? If not, all in favor of the oral amendment, normally we don't vote, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary? The oral amendment is passed. Now, do we have Mr. Representative?
And Mr. Chair, we have an honest guy here who respects the process, so I think Representative Morrow is a good example for the children.
He took something out. He took something out that wasn't even there.
Exactly.
Mr. Chairman.
That's Ed Beard.
After we dispose of the MB, whatever they are, amendments, I have an oral amendment I'd like to offer.
Okay. Do you want to do that now?
Yeah. Great, if I may. Mr. Chairman, I know that I'm going to hear screams of angst because a lot of work has gone into it, but I'm really concerned about the towing sections of the bill. Starting on page 8, I believe it's sections 12 through 18. I'd like to move to delete those, and I believe I have a couple witnesses that would like to speak to that that motion.
Okay, Chair. I think there are quite a few now, and I see there are some witnesses. Maybe we should temporarily get back the other one. We'll take yours. Is that okay?
That's fine with me, Mr. Chairman.
We've already got a number of witnesses.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that. Representative Hornstein, there are no other amendments that
I... No, I think the only one left is Representative Kalin. He's almost there. He's working out some language. I might not object to it so much if he comes back with better language.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Kalin,
I appreciate your patience. I was chairing a committee upstairs. I'd like to offer the MB1 amendment as written with a oral amendment to it, oral correction that I'd like to...
You want to make the oral correction?
I would. Below line 4.24, where you see the handwritten number 8, at the end of the third line there, after develop recommendations, I'd like to strike the word and, or delete the word and delete the entire next line. So delete and a timeline for implementing the successful strategies in. Oh, sorry. Leave the word in.
No, you don't need it. leave the word and in?
Oh, I'm hearing that we don't need the word in either. So delete that entire line and the last word on the third handwritten line.
Does everyone have that? Any questions on it?
Do you have that, Mr. Burr?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kalin, I would recommend adding a word to replace all that stricken language. And I'd recommend adding four, colon.
I can live with that, Mr. Chair and Mr. Burr. So I'd like to incorporate, replace all the deleted language with the word for, F-O-R.
And colon.
And the colon. We can retain the colon from the...
Everyone has that? If not, we'll incorporate that in the... You want to explain your amendment, President Kalin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. As part of the Urban Partnership Agreement, there's an annual report that I believe that the Metropolitan Council language is incorporated in the type language. But one of the things that I believe it's important to do is to continually advance the options available all over the metro area and actually all over the state. And I think we're going to learn some lessons along the Urban Partnership Agreement project. And I think by 2010, we should be able to start to see what's working and starting to analyze the applicability of those strategies along other corridors that the Metropolitan Council has identified as priorities, and those are the West Line Corridor up my neck of the woods, the Red Rock Corridor down in Southeast Metro, and then of course the I-94 corridor going east. I believe that the Metropolitan Council and MnDOT are okay with this language now. We believe we may have comments about one of the funding questions that might come up, but since the study is already, and the report is already going to have to be made every year, I think it's helpful to continue to advance those projects and advance the discussion at the legislature as well.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will, with these changes and a better, clear understanding of the Met Council position, I see no trouble with this. I'm glad it's here rather than in the UPA bill. Actually, that was one of my concerns. But I had one just technical question and idea or proposal for Representative Kalin, which is on the report. You say starting with January 15th, 2010. It's my understanding that this project will commence in September of 2009. So maybe if we won't really have a lot of data after 4 months. So I wonder if it's a problem to commence this in 2011.
Representative Kalin?
Mr. Chair, that works for me. I'd like to incorporate that change, changing the dates on mine, on the first handwritten line from January 5th, 2010 to January 5th, 2011.
Everyone have that? Any questions? If not, we'll incorporate that. Representative Nelson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just noticed the absence of any reference to any transit ways in western or northwestern Hennepin County, or Southwest Corridor, or Botano Boulevard, and I just want to put that on the record.
Representative Kalin.
I think Representative Hausman has commented.
Mr. Chair, I think the difference there is those are LRT and commuter rail lines, all of them that you referenced, and what I see Representative Kalin doing here is where there's a highway corridor, that's where we would learn about the 35W application. Would that also work on 35W North? Would it work on 94 East? I think Botano is going to be LRT. I think Southwest is going to be LRT. So the what we learn there about what you do on a highway corridor wouldn't be relevant to those corridors.
Representative Nelson. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know Southwest Corridor, they're talking LRT, and I know Botano Boulevard is just starting the process to determine what type of busway or what type of transferway would work best there. They're hoping for LRT, but as of right now, that's a wide open, so, but it's, like I said, it's just everything, there's nothing for that part of the count, for the metro area.
Mr. Chair, is there a highway in that corridor? That would be the relevant question.
Highway 81 or Botano Boulevard.
Would be...
Mr. Chair. Representative Kalin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson and I just had an intense negotiations over here, and I did finally agree, he twisted my arm, to work with him to identify whether the UPA strategies could actually work on Botano or any other or the other corridors that he mentioned. So I'll continue working. I'd urge adoption of the MB1 amendment as we have it with the incorporated changes. I'll work with Representative Nelson and Representative Hornstein, and if we feel like a change is appropriate, we'll seek one either on the floor or perhaps there may be an option in a later process with the Senate.
Mr. Sexton?
Mr. Chair and members, I'm sorry, Representative Cameron, did you? I missed what you just said about the seeking money part. I'm not joking. I'm not trying to.
No, Mr. Chair, I said that you would comment on the financing issue.
And yes. Mr. Chair, Representative Galen, I appreciate that. I think that one of the things that we would look to is I think that this type of study would be eligible for the money that the quarter cent sales tax that was recently passed as part of the broader transportation funding bill. I think that something like this could be applied for to do that type of study along these corridors. I mean, because what they really are, transitways, and I know that when the legislature passed those funding bills, that the whole idea of the quarter cent sales tax was for transitway capital and transitway operating, and I'm hoping maybe a little bit broader picture on that, but for right now I know it's transitway operating and capital. And I think that this type of study would be a good way for the council to potentially find a funding source for that. And I do appreciate moving it out a year, because the downtown Minneapolis piece of the UPA doesn't take effect really until December 31st of 2009. So we'd be doing this 16 days after it opens. The extra year actually works pretty good.
Any further comments? Representative Hornstein?
Mr. Chair, I'm much more comfortable with this amendment than I was when I first saw it, and so I would encourage a supportive vote.
No further questions. All in favor of the amendment, MB1, say aye.
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 Contrary? The amendment is adopted. Representative Beard has an oral amendment.
Mr. Chairman, yes, reissue the motion to delete sections 12 through 18 of the bill.
What bill
of the delete all PE 3800, the 1387 version.
Would you repeat that again?
It's the the AO8 1387 version of this, what we're discussing tonight, sections 12, beginning on page 8, through section 18, which is ends on page 12.
Would you just want to explain it a little bit, Representative Beard?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, this is the portion dealing with impounded vehicles, towed vehicles, and how we dispose of them, how folks can get their stuff back out of the cars, the vehicles that have been towed, without actually redeeming or retrieving their vehicles. And I know this has caused an enormous amount of consternation among the people that we asked to actually tow cars and keep our streets clean and the shoulders safe and so on and so forth. And in the interest of hearing those folks out before this committee, I don't know that they had their time to actually testify earlier, but I'd like to offer the amendment and ask for them to speak to it. Maybe stand for a few questions.
Yes, thanks. Mr. Burris had a question.
Mr. Chair and members, Representative Beard, I just wanted to let you know that in the original bill there was another provision, and I'm not sure if you wanted to remove that as well from the bill. That provision regards a special permit for tow trucks to exceed height and weight weight and length limitations.
Mr. Chairman, no. The intention is only to deal with the impoundment and redemption portions of the bill.
Okay, Mr. Bruce. Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you, Representative Beard.
You're welcome.
We have some testifiers. Mr. Seward? No, I know it. Welcome to the committee. Mr. Seward?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Todd Seward. I'm from Redmond, Minnesota. I own and operate Seaworks Garage and Towing. I represent the Minnesota Professional Towing Association. And we're here. I believe it was implied earlier that the towers in Minnesota weren't interested in this anymore. We are here to tell you that we are interested in this legislation. We do oppose page 8, section 12 through 18. We've dealt with this for several years now, and the TORs are hired to do a job. We do the job. We do it extremely well. We have very little problems or complaints. We deal with thousands of vehicles a year. We do have compassion for what the bill is intended for the homeless and the poor. It's just that the TORs have been pitted as the bad guy here. We're not the bad guys. We're hired to do a job. We have a law that gives us forbidden to notify owners. It gives them time to retrieve belongings, make arrangements in advance, and then after a period of time when they don't do that, gives us the opportunity to get rid of them and move on. We're not the bad guys here. When we keep getting pitted as the bad guys, we're just the end of the chain here. The problems exist way before it gets to the TORs. What this bill does do, it does give a lot of requirements. It gives a lot of definitions. It opens up the TORs for additional liability. If one thing is missed in all these requirements, I'm sure we're going to be in court somewhere. It's putting a burden on us, and we're not getting paid for this in the first place when these situations happen. We worked with several agencies, and so far what we've come up with is the best possible solution for this is to put it where it belongs. It's more of a social issue. The TORs are more than happy to deal with it at that level and try to figure out arrangements to be made at that particular place and time. We're not professional social workers. We're not trained on behalf of going through these processes. The bill that exists, we do very well with, and we believe that it takes care of those types of things.
Any questions of Mr. Seaworth? Severson, right.
Thank you, Mr. Darren. Mr. Seaworth, you guys are labeled as the bad guys. I wonder if you can, you know, how do you justify not giving a lady back her wheelchair after a car accident where she's lost her husband? Maybe you could amplify on how that does not categorize as a bad guy.
Seaworth?
The wheelchair issue has been brought up for several years. We have tracked it down. Happened to a tour up in the northern part of the metro area, I believe. What happened in that particular instance where the person did not get his wheelchair back was there was a personal injury accident involved, and the state patrol had put a hold on the personal, on the vehicle and the personal belongings pending an investigation. So the reason that that wheelchair at that instant was not held because of tour. And to answer your question is why we're not the bad guys, we aren't the bad guys. You know, we were hired to do a job, and we're trying to conform to what the regulations are and be fair and honest and give the people a proper time to make arrangements to get their things. And then when that is expired, you know, it gives us the way to get rid of these vehicles so they don't stack up on city streets and in our impound lot.
Thank you, Mr. Yes. And also, what kind of liabilities would this bill entail that you feel that it would bring into your community?
Just briefly looking at it, it gives a lot of qualifications that we don't understand. It's not clear as to where these things are going to come from or what type of statements are going to be set forth in front of us. It tells us that we have to release a number of different belongings, and we're opening ourselves up to liability there. We don't know what things are what, and if one of our impound operators missed one thing, like I say, I'm sure we're going to be in court trying to defend ourselves as to why we didn't release a piece of clothing that we didn't deem as a necessity or something like that.
Further questions? No, thank you very much, okay. Mr. Seaworth.
I do believe there are a couple other right. people that would like to testify. Is that possible, sir?
Renee Gardis?
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, just a housekeeping item. If we could ask the witness to point that microphone more towards you. Yeah, there you go. It's easier to hear. Thanks.
Welcome to the committee.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Renee Gardis, and I am an owner of Twin Cities Transport and Recovery. I myself have been born and raised in this industry and have owned my own company now for, I'm proud to say, 20 years this year. We have three locations in the metro area and have three impound lots in various municipalities here in the city. And I'm here to speak against Sections 12 through 18 today of this House File 3800. saying that it does place an unfair burden on the towing impound lot operator, and also an unfair liability, as Todd was saying. Somebody's going to come in and want to get something out of a car that possibly is not their car, it belongs to somebody else. Well, that person may come in the next day or 2 days later and say, where was my Rolex watch that was in my car? It's missing. Or where are my CDs? Or where are my personal effects? Or and asking an employee of an impound lot to have to determine whose possessions belong to whom is unfair. I can count on probably one hand the number of times in 20 years that we have had an instance at one of our lots where somebody wants to come and get their personal possessions or their vehicle and they can't afford it. There are many social departments here that are able to help these people out. We've had Sharing and Caring Hands call us and say, what's the bill on the vehicle? Would you accept all the checks? We need to make it payable to you instead of to the owner of the car. And we have no problem doing that. We've had churches that have helped people out, paying bills and getting cars out of the impound lot or removing of their personal possessions and then asking us to dispose of the vehicle for them if the vehicle has no further value to them. We do all of that at no additional charge to the customer. We haul it to the crusher or wherever it's going to be recycled or whatever, and we don't charge the customers anymore to do that. I guess I hope you consider to take out these sections. I think it is an unfair burden on the industry as a whole, and I think it would really adversely affect the people in northern Minnesota that have very small companies and work in a very small town. And I don't think that many of those mom-and-pop shops could possibly be able to survive being in business if they don't get paid for the service that they have to provide. We don't get paid. When we provide service, we get called by police departments in the cities or by the state patrol or whoever we have contracts with. We don't get paid by the state patrol. We don't get paid by the different cities. We have to get paid by the vehicle owner. And so that's why we're asking you today to delete those sections of this bill.
Are there questions?
Mr. Chairman and Ms. Yarbase, Jarvis, when a police department orders a tow and you go get it, you don't get paid by the city, you don't get paid by the county of patrol, but do they have requirements that you can't release the vehicle until they sign off on it? What I'm trying to recall is an instance where one of my kids, God bless them, left a truck sit along the street and told me about it later that night and went back to get it, was gone. What a surprise. So I had to visit the local impound lot, and it seemed to me there was a sign that said I had to have a ticket receipt from the police that I paid a fine or had their clearance or something. Do you run into that? How do you get around that? You
started?
We told, like I said, for multiple police departments, and each municipality kind of has their own guidelines on how they do it. One municipality that we tow for, it requires the owner of the vehicle to go to the city, to the actual city hall, provide proof of ownership and proof of insurance to the people there at that police department, get a handwritten release from them, they bring that release to us, and then we know that it's okay to release it, it's been approved by the city. Most instances are, if a car's been impounded or in an accident, they require proof of ownership, proof of insurance, and a current driver's license. Those are the three standard things that they require. In the instance that Todd was talking about the infamous wheelchair, once in a while there are holds placed on a vehicle, contents, everything, while there's possibly an active investigation or involved in a fatality or a hit and run. The police department has to have time to run their investigation or possibly do an accident reconstruction, and they don't want anybody disturbing the vehicle or anything like that. And in those instances, we have to wait for either a fax release from that police entity saying, okay, you can now release it to the owner, provided they provide proof of ownership, insurance, and a driver's license.
Any further questions? No, thank you.
Thank you.
Art Smith? Welcome to the committee.
My name is Art Smith. I own Automatic Towing in Blaine, Minnesota. I've been in the towing industry since 1975, and it's been a problem from day one since towing's been around, is people wanting their belongings out of cars. I'm a board member on the Towing Association. All the towing companies in the state now, we release prescription drugs, prescription glasses, their driver's license, credit cards, billfold purses, any medical devices or child seats, or if it's a tool of their trade. We do this. There is no law saying we have to do it. 99% of the companies do it automatically, trying to resolve the problem. As discussed before, in the last 5 years, I've probably had 3 people where the police call me, told me they didn't have any money or whatever. When they notify us, they know when they pick them up if they're, what's going on with the person, or if they're recently divorced or kicked out or whatever. And I've had it where Sharing Caring Hands called me, church has called us, and where Anoka County has a Humane Society where they've called us. And they said, yes, can you work with these people on this car or whatever? Or the Humane Society will say, okay, we'll just pay you for the toll bill. If the person don't have insurance, that's the first question they ask. If they don't have insurance, they'll have us tow it to their home or whatever. We don't charge them storage when we do that. We charge them with one toll bill for home, one toll bill for the shop. We may eat a week's worth of storage working with them. These are things people don't hear about. We're doing this automatically by themselves. That's why I say we cannot support this 12 through 18. It has to be stopped now. If they do try and pass this, it's going to make it where we have to almost see an attorney to release to see who qualifies for what. We won't know if they're on welfare, what their income is. I mean, I just think it's a bad law. I think it should be stopped now.
Any questions to the witness?
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Brett Letourneau?
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Brett Letourneau. I own Citywide Service in Brooklyn Park, a towing company. I'm also the Vice President of the Minnesota Professional Towing Association. Like the people before me, from the AFTA Association, we oppose this legislation 12 through 18. The one thing that hasn't been touched on is that there's a difference between won't pays and can't pays. And the people that can't pay, there are things in place, like they mentioned, Sharing and Caring Hands and different outlets, to resolve the problem. We're currently all doing that. What this legislation leads to is the people that won't pay. And a lot of times, the stuff inside the vehicle is more valuable than the car. We're not in the business to want the car or the stuff inside. We just want to be paid for our service. So by having a hold on the stuff inside the car, it gives people incentive to come up and settle up the bill. I just wanted to make that clear and that we oppose this.
Any questions to the testifier? Not. Thank you, Mr. Lance Berger, or Lance Berger?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Lance Berger. I'm with Berger Towing. I'm from Rogers, Minnesota. I'm here representing my company and the Minnesota Professional Towing Association. I'm also against page 8, section 12 through 18 of House File 3800. Short and sweet, this isn't a towing company problem. We feel it's a state problem, and it should be addressed as such and not as a towing company problem. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions to the testifier? Griffin Beard.
Mr. Chairman, sir, I'm sorry I didn't catch your name, but do you ever just go out and snag cars that you think are a problem, or do you only tow whenever the proper authorities call and say, we need you to move this?
That's correct. Anytime any vehicle we end up in Pelham Lot is requested by a law enforcement agency.
So, Mr. Chairman, this would be somewhat different than the what I call the sharks, affectionately, roaming around Minneapolis and St. Paul snagging cars.
Absolutely, completely different issue.
And that was my question, I guess. I'm sorry you said.
Representative Sievers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And could you tell us, if you get a junker by the side of the road, you pick it up, nobody comes to claim it, you've got to get rid of it,
Does that cost you money, or do you make money on that?
It's a loss anytime because we never get paid for the storage. Obviously, we paid a driver, a truck, insurance, property taxes. We've paid all that before we even show up to pick up that car.
Representative Severson, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And in terms of hazmat materials and those things, in order to dispose, do you have to take care of that within your own structure, or how does that work?
Of course, we've got to abide by all those laws and rules just like everybody else, and it has to be disposed of properly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I won't demean you by calling you a representative, but to Representative Severson's question, for the tows themselves, for these abandoned vehicles and other, aren't there generally contracts with memoranda of understanding with either the sheriff or the police department, so that you do get compensated for the tow in a lot of those situations, at least in greater Minnesota?
No.
I believe that's...
Mr. Berta?
No.
Mr. Berta? We couldn't hear it.
I'm sorry. Yes, we are not... anytime we get called to pick something up, we don't know if we're going to get paid or not.
That's incredible.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate that answer, and I'm sorry I didn't catch where you were from, but I did talk to my sheriff after, because I carried this bill last year, and I've tried to learn quite a bit more about the industry during the process and then since. And my sheriff did tell me that one of his burdens is to actually equally distribute the calls for abandoned vehicles and wrecked vehicles in the county to make sure that the towers who serve our area are equally happy. And I said, does that mean you compensate for those tows? And certainly in our county, his answer was yes. So, and I just wonder, with the price of scrap metal and others going up and up, I'm certainly sympathetic to the plight of the small business owner, pride myself that we had an open dialogue last year about the bill. But I do think that that we also have to sort of find a common ground or find a balance in there in terms of the picture that we give. Also, in terms of liability, currently there's liability under the current circumstances, probably even greater liability than the protection that would be afforded if we keep these provisions in and they become enacted.
Any further questions? No, thank you.
Thank you.
I presume Representative Hornstein, this is...
Well, Mr. Chair, I'll make some brief comments, and then, you know, we have to drill with...
There was a last testifier that we had that registered. Okay. Are you signed up?
Okay.
Get more?
Mm-hmm. No.
I think there's one more testifier from the towers, is that correct?
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry, was it? excuse me, I came over illness. I was going to testify, but I got through my 2 cents in. Lance Quett, Executive Director of the Minnesota Service Station Association. I apologize, you guys.
We didn't get your name, I'm sorry.
Okay, Lance Quett. Executive Director of the Minnesota Service Station Association. Getting over an illness, so I apologize. But I reflect or echo the statements of the parties before me. The fact that our industry has had enough challenges the way it is. These guys have safety issues on the side of the roads. This is just one more problem that they have to worry about that they really shouldn't need to worry about at this time. Our industry, like I said, it's kind of a tough time, tough go, whether in the service repair, station, petroleum, or towing. It's getting tough out there, and this does not make things any better. Our guys have more important things to worry about than if they're going to get paid for a tow. That's just my 2 cents. I apologize for my voice.
Any questions? Representative Beard.
Mr. Chairman, I'm afraid to ask many questions and encourage no one else to ask him any questions.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, everybody.
Well, Representative Taylor, excuse me, you do have a question.
I don't know if this is Mr. Clatt, so actually I'll hand it off to one of the others for Mr. Clatt's sake. One of the things that I tried to talk to every towing company in my community, just I happened to use their services a couple of times over the last year and chatted them up, and I think we probably all do this to learn how things are going and, you know, just touch base with business owners. One of the
the, I can't remember if it's actually current law or if it's something that we need to add, which is the requirement of moving over one lane, moving out of the right lane for emergency services and for EMS and for police. It's already in law, but I did hear from towers that folks are not moving over for towers as much as they are for emergency services. I'm just I'm seeing them nod their heads, so maybe just afterwards, if we can, I'd love to talk a little bit more about ways that we can increase that protection, because I know you guys are putting your lives at stake just like anyone else who's trapped in an assisting vehicle and drivers on the side of the road.
Representative Kalen, from what you said, apparently you have two new cars this year.
Representative Leader, as you might remember during our discussion of the new tab fees, I do actually have a brand new vehicle in the that we set it up and actually bought.
You have another
one.
You have a testifier, Representative Hornsky.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just very briefly, I think we made a good decision yesterday, and I would reject the Beard Amendment. I just want to point out a couple things that Mr. Elwood also from Legal Aid. I think it's very important that we look at lines 10.11 through 10.16, which very clearly stipulates the relief based, the means test that we have. I think a couple of the testifiers, you know, either were not aware of that or ignored it, but it's a very, very specific group of people that we're addressing here, needs. People on general assistance, Minnesota Care, supplemental security income, food stamps. This is a very specific group of people that this bill is aiming to assist. And I think it is just a matter of justice that we're talking about a very clear and specific means test for people simply to get their stuff back. And that's what this bill is about. It's very different than previous bills we've had before us. This testimony, I think, was similar to what we heard last year, but this is a very different bill, and I think it's a fair bill, and Mr. Elwood will speak to a couple of other provisions, and then I think we'll be finished with our testimony.
Representative Severson had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll wait until after Mr. Elwood's done.
Mr. Elwood.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Ron Elwood, Legal Aid. Thank you for considering the inclusion here, and I just want to point out a couple of things. You've all heard this bill for years, and I just want to emphasize, I think what we have done in this bill is listened very carefully, heard, and responded appropriately to the concerns that we have heard expressed from the towing industry for the last couple of years. The issue is, and let's make sure we understand the issue. We have heard repeatedly that the industry is not interested in harming poor people. They do not want to harm people who cannot pay. They only want the ability to have the leverage from those who can pay. And the problem that we've encountered over the last couple of years is separating the can't pays from the won't pays. I think we have done the job in this bill of making a very bright line, making it real simple, who can and who can't pay. We've used accepted definitions in statute of who's poor. And not only that, but we've also placed the burden on the owner, the vehicle owner, to prove that they're in that category. I also want to point out that we've heard that many times towers will do what we've asked them to do. And I'm sure that's absolutely the case. But let me just, I don't want to take too much time, but let me just tell you a couple of stories. St. Cloud, one of our clients had the car stolen, was unable to retrieve the following items: birth certificate, W-2s, their tax return, and their clothing. In the Twin Cities, we had a deaf person moving out of homeless shelter, unable to get documents that they absolutely needed to get medical assistance. Alexandria, clients had winter clothes for their kids, children's school books, and homework. Catholic Charities, who is also, by the way, supporting this bill along with the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless, told us the story of a homeless couple that got towed, could not get the sleep apnea machine back, the birth certificates, or their identification. And finally, Listening House right here in St. Paul, a homeless working man unable to get clothes, shampoo, family pictures, and presents for Father's Day. You might have heard, seen the story today in the Star Tribune, the article by the columnist Nick Coleman, where the person was given, he had a broken ankle or something, and the only thing he got is a homeless person, only thing he got was the other shoe. Everything else that person owned was destroyed. That doesn't seem to make any sense. So what we're saying here is, and by the way, the last thing I'd like to say is, over the years we have heard the interest of this industry in getting permission to tow overweight and over-length vehicles. In our bill, we have provided that. We've heard that need. It certainly wasn't something that is an issue for legal aid, but I think for us it was a gesture to say we've heard that's something they needed. It didn't seem, you know, it seemed people were okay with it, so we put it on our bill. I would ask you to include the provision in the bill, and I stand for questions.
Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Elwood. And, I guess I was just kind of curious as to how you are, I mean, do all of these individuals that fit this qualification get a yellow sticker on their forehead so that these towers know how they are going to be identified as fitting into this category?
Mr. Chair?
One word, I think.
Mr. Chair? And, Mr. Chair, Representative Severson.
Mm-hmm.
I think the... First of all, this is not a government program, number one. There's no agency oversight or anything of that nature. Somebody comes in with proof, whether it's a letter from legal aid or a EBT card or something of that nature. The reality, what's going to happen in real life, and by the way, I would point out, in the last couple of bills, we have had a private right of action for a violation of any of these provisions. We have taken that out. There's not in here in this bill. We are operating under the assumption, from what we've heard for years from this industry, that they operate in good faith and they don't want to hurt poor people, and they will do the right thing. And so we are giving them... We're taking them at their word, and we're giving them the authority to decide whether the proof they get is appropriate or not. The reality is, in any tow shop, in anywhere in Minnesota, if a person comes in and presents any item of proof, and that tow operator says, I don't believe you, that person's not going to get their stuff. That's just the reality. And if that happens on a widespread basis, we'll be back in a couple of years to say, what can we do? But I don't think that's going to happen. Because the answer is, from their mouth, we don't want to hurt the people that cannot pay. And they have told us they know who they are. So if they at least have, but they can't really, they have no basis. So if there's some basis of proof, I think the towers will say, fine.
Any further questions?
Well, and Ms. Chair and Mr. Elwood, to that point, I guess I'm just curious then, if you're making it that wide open, and that then why are we even doing this to start with? Because I guess you're saying this isn't a government program, you're leaving it at the discretion of the towers if they don't believe it. The other thing that I see that comes into place here is that if they don't believe it and these individuals go back to legal aid and say, you know what? I told them that I was homeless. I told them that I was destitute and on MSIP, and they didn't believe me. Let's sue the socks off them.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, Representative Stevenson, because we have no private right of action, there would be no basis for a suit, number one. And number two, the answer to your question is, why are we doing this in the first place? As a simple answer, because it's the right thing to do.
Further questions? Not any. See, Representative Beard, do you have any comments? I think we have all the testifiers.
Mr. Chairman, yeah, and thank you for allowing me to make the motion and have these folks speak. But, I remember the first term I was here, I had a hold of this with Mr. Elwood, and we tried to do the Lord's work here, and it was like hanging on to a couple of third rails, I guess. and being very sympathetic to the guy who towed several of my cars when my kids would leave him sit in various places around town, and knowing his heart and knowing what he did behind the scenes to actually take care of people who couldn't pay. and the extreme frustration he had with people who wouldn't pay and abused the system, abused his trust in his goodness. This is a really stiff situation, so I'm grateful that at least the penalty phase is out of this, and but still I trust the goodness, and I see how far the industry has come since we've even initiated the discussion over the last 6 or 8 years. They're to be applauded for that. However, I still think that life will work just swimmingly well without these sections, so I'd ask for your support for my amendment to delete, and I'm done talking. Thank you.
Representative Beard, just to clarify, because we kind of had the whole bill discussed, would you identify exactly what you're doing, like 12 and 18, what it is?
In the bill itself, moving to remove sections 12 through 18. I believe Mr. Burris begins on page 8. Those consecutive sections right in a row. And only those sections. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We're ready. Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for indulgence. Just the closing comments. I mean, we are here working for transportation. We're working for better transportation in Minnesota. And too often, we get caught down into the minuscule issues here, spending tremendous amounts of hours on, and I know Mr. Elwood's passion on this, and I appreciate that. But the bottom line is, this is another mandate that we are putting on small business that is having a tough time struggling in this day and age, particularly at this particular time, and the perception is going to be from the business owners that we don't know when to stop, that we don't know when to say, you know what, we're here for you, we're not here against you. And so that is my concern with this particular provision. You've seen the hearts of these towers, and that is widespread. We begin to legislate because we don't believe people have good hearts. They have good hearts. If there are people who don't have good hearts, then deal with them on an individual basis. But rather than beat the whole cotton picking herd with a hammer, let's just say these people have good intentions. They want to do good work. They do try to make a living at this, and we don't need to hamper their ability to do that. And so I would ask you to adopt the Beard Amendment.
Representative Beard renewed his motion that the oral amendment, section 12 through 18, be recommended to pass. Deleted section, 12 and 18. All in favor say aye.
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 Contrary?
No.
The motion is defeated.
Division.
Division's been called for. Raise your right hand. All in favor. Right hand. Okay. All against? The amendment is defeated. Thank you. Representative Hornstein, I think that's all the amendments we have.
Yep. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And before we vote, and this is going to the Bruce Springsteen concert on Sunday night, and I feel like I have to thank the band a little here for the work. It's the closest I'll get to this. So I do want to thank again Matt Burris and Corinne Zewers for their incredible work over this whole period of time, and Andrew Knutson and Dan Kane from our partisan research team, and of course Susie Maher and Abby Mann, who've really done incredible work, especially over the last few days, getting all these amendments together and dealing with the public. And I really appreciate the incredible work that all of our staff have done. And this is not an easy bill to put together, as the chair attested to, in terms of the finance bill as well. These are big bills. So thank you, all of you. I'm very pleased with the fact that we were able to get so many of our member initiatives in this bill. And again, this will be traveling to the Finance Committee, and then to Ways and Means, and then to the floor. And we'll be addressing the first policy bill a lot sooner than this one, but I imagine this will come up later on in the session on the House floor. So with that, members, I ask for your support. I appreciate everyone's work on this bill and all the members' time that you've spent marking up the bill and going to all the hearings we had in the Policy Committee.
Representative Hornstein moves that.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Hobart.
Representative Hornstein, with your intro, I thought we were going to get an impression. Springsteen, is that in your repertoire?
It is, but we can do that after the hearing. I'll take requests.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Beard.
I hate to form a cloud and rain after Representative Hornstein's wrap up there, so I won't go through all the issues. I just want to note for the committee and for the record, Article 2, the Railroad Walkway Safety Act, is giving me enormous heartburn, and at some point I'd like to speak to that. Perhaps I'll reserve my comments for the floor, or hopefully somebody in Ways and Means will talk about this. You did say it was going to Ways to Be Mean, didn't you?
Correct. Okay. I believe it goes to Finance and Ways and Means. And I just wanted to say very briefly, Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble and I met with both sides on that this morning.
Mm-hmm.
We have not reached consensus, but I do believe we're making some progress, at least in clarifying some positions. And Representative Beard, I'll assure you that Senator Dibble and I will continue those meetings and try to at least move towards some degree of consensus between the two sides on that.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I wanted that heard, and I wanted to hear that comment as well.
You're feeling much better now.
Well, only slightly. Only slightly. But that's because I'm skipping supper, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hornstein renews his motion that House File 3800 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the Finance Committee, Finance Division.
Hmm.
All in favor say aye.
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 Contrary?
No.
The motion passed. Actually, before we leave, we should recognize two of these pages, and I think Melissa has a birthday today.
Yes, she does. Melissa has a birthday. Yeah. Yeah.
And thank you, Melissa, too. And our next meeting is actually Monday morning at 9:30 in this same room. Thank you, members. The meeting is adjourned.